Okay, it's November 4th, and gentlemen, Adrian.
Yes.
Egan.
Right here.
We're here for one reason and one reason only, and that is...
the High Metal RVF2SS with SAP and without SAP. And something called Macross Delta.
Macross what?
Delta.
Did you say Delta?
Delta.
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 Deluta.
Delta.
Deluta no sora wo tsuranuite.
Delta.
Oh my god, Annika, I think they're talking about Delta.
Delta.
Deluta.
Delta. There better be some destroids in this.
Well, look, guys, there's so much to talk about. This is, as always, Gwyn Campbell, known as Torture on the Boards. Here is your host for another episode of Macross Speaker Podcast. As previously introduced, to my right, I have...
Save. Also known... well, my real name is Adrian, also known as Indiana Macross, blah, blah, blah.
And to my left...
Egan Liu. No pseudonym, no alias. At least not one I would use on the air.
Just a secret agent, man.
So, let's get straight into it, gentlemen, because it's been one heck of a week for Macross news. As everyone out there who keeps track of Macross is probably aware, the official announcement for Macross Delta has happened. It was streamed. It was streamed on Nickel Nickel, on the official Macross website, on the Bandai channel. It was streamed on Thursday, October 29th. Yes, I knew I'd forget that. At 12 midday here, Japan time. And Egan, do you want to tell me basically who was on this stream?
It's all of the people who are going to be involved in Macross Delta and the upper echelons, starting with, of course, Shoji Kawamori, which he was, as usually, introduced as Mochi creator. And along with him, a couple of other people who've been involved in Big West as well as Satellite. Shinichi Hirai, who's been at least through Frontier and even back to the Macross 2 Blu-ray disc release. He's been involved with Big West.
And he's the producer for Delta.
That's right.
Okay.
The actual director, because Kyle Moore is going to be like the guy, the puppet master, handling all of the different strings and puppets. The actual director of the series is someone who's worked at Satellite before, Kenji Yasuda. He worked on Aquarian Love, Knowing to Your Utter Self.
Is Aquarian Love out yet? Isn't that the OVA for the anniversary?
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm.
That's where the two Aquarians meet.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That looked way more interesting than Aquarian Logos, I'll say that much.
No one's listening on this from their staff, is it?
Anyways.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'd have to have watched one bit of Aquarian to know what you guys are talking about. I've never watched it.
Fair enough. So who else did we have?
Our friend, Tengen, was also there. Notice he was credited as Macross Visual Artist.
Right.
Yeah. That's all things Macross.
Because the man wears many, many hats.
We're going to talk about a little bit later that there is this event that happened, Bandai Time Machine Nations, but they put on the wall for the main Macross creators, starting with Kawamori, Miyatake, designer of the STF-1 Macross ship itself, Mikimoto, the original character designer, and right up to them, the youngest of them, and someone who wasn't actually involved until a decade after the first Macross, Tengen.
Well, more than a decade after, because he was first involved with VFX2.
That's right, yeah.
So it's what, late 90s, early 2000s?
Yeah.
So, yeah, 20 years on, and we have new blood on that wall with the Masters, a new Master.
Indeed, yeah.
The Macross Masters. One.
And he would discover because Kawamori saw his website and said, wow.
It's Macross, the Masters saga now.
And each of those guys gets their own opening. Anyway... of course, we also had the winner of the Idol Contest, which, as we've discussed before, had 8,000 people apply for it. And back in February, we found out that that had been narrowed down to 15 people. And they announced the winner of that contest. Although we don't know if she's the only winner, do we? Because there's an Idol unit, as we'll get to in a moment. I'm not sure if they're all going to be established singers or not. But anyways, who am I talking about, Egan?
Suzuki, she's just 18 years old, straight from Aichi Prefecture. Not quite the boonies of Japan, but definitely not Tokyo. And that kind of plays into the character that she's playing in Macross Delta, who's also not quite in the center of the galaxy, literally the frontier of the galaxy.
Right, and that brings us to the key visual image they presented. There were two key visual images, one with a group of idols, with a background of a bunch of the new... VF-31 Siegfried Valkyries, and the other one with a bunch of guys, and the background of...
pilots we don't know yet.
Yeah.
This being Macross in anime.
Bunch of guys with several Drakens, the other new type of Valkyrie, as was revealed by Kawamori earlier when he discussed the first key visual image a couple of weeks ago now, was based on the Draken, and then when they revealed the actual Valkyrie itself, only the fighter mode, it is very, very much based on the real-life Draken. But, so we've got these four or five girls, it's obviously an idol unit, and there was a lot discussed between the MC and the guests, and I noticed she did, you know, she'd ask Kawamori a question, she'd ask Yasuda a question. The only time we really had one or two people monopolizing the talk show was when Tenjin and Kawamori were talking about the Valkyrie design. Yeah. But they discussed these key visuals, and there were a few important points made, Egan, as you touched upon. That was that this new series would be set at the frontier of the galaxy, which is to say the furthest outreaches, probably the frontier of explored space, unlike in Macross Frontier, where they were traveling towards the center of the galaxy. And it's about as far removed from Frontier as you can get, which is a very interesting take, and perhaps limits the potential for cameos.
Or not. You pointed out something in the teaser where, well, that's up to you to explain.
Well, we'll get to that. But so you mentioned that. They also mentioned that we have this idol group called the Valkyrie, or
the as German pronunciation.
And how do you pronounce that?
Oh, I won't even try. I can try the Japanese approximation of the German pronunciation.
Oh, well, we had somebody introduce this show in German. We'll have to just contact him and tell him to give us a recording.
Valkyrie.
Close enough. At least based on the Japanese. Close,
but so the spelling is what? W-A-L-K-U-R-E?
Yep. Just right. Like Volkswagen.
And it must be pointed out that this means Valkyrie, so it's Valkyrie just spelt another way. Mm-hmm. And so that's this group of singers that's on this key visual image, and we don't really know exactly what they do. All we know is that they do not actually ride the Valkyries. That was explicitly asked, and they don't say they don't pilot them. They said they don't ride them.
There's an interesting designation they were given within the teaser that was shown. Tactical sound unit.
Right, so it was pointed out that they support the fighters. Now, whether that is support in singing, and they mix it up with duets and solos and group songs, that's one way of thinking. For all we know, they could step into a machine and be the AIs for the Valkyries and support them that way. We don't know. But the girls themselves do not sit in the cockpit and fly the planes. And I think
there's
that's
no
an
room.
Important good point. It's only a single-seater plane, Valkyrie, and in the footage we saw, it looked to be a regular pilot in a pilot suit looking thingy.
Granted, this is Macross. They could probably be on the laps of the pilots, but probably not for an entire series.
Yeah, that's only Fokker on. No wait, who was
Kakizaki?
Kakizaki on the lap of Fokker.
Yep, all for that steak. 3 days Kakizaki sat on Fokker's lap. Let it be known. that's canon. So, on the other hand, we have the guys.
Now, or, well, pilots.
Well, pilots. Are they all, most of them look like guys to me, but...
Dude looks like a lady.
Lady looks like a dude. There's five. There's five in the picture. There's four in the bottom, and there's one off, in the background. But the one in the middle looks like a woman.
The redhead?
Yep.
And it's also worth noting, I'm not sure how many people picked up on it, on the key visual... there's those five characters, but there's six fighters in the background. If you look at the key visual, there's actually six of them.
Oh.
Which brings us to the point that it was mentioned...
Specifically
that the main characters, at least some of them, may not necessarily even be in these key visuals. And in fact, in footage that they later showed, there were two very major characters who are not in either... Well, who appear to be major characters.
The very first person we see in the teaser... is not someone in those visuals.
Exactly. Yes. And I got to point out that Japanese fans moving quickly on this, we've already seen two people cosplaying as that character.
try.
I wouldn't attempt to try. It's just they just went out and got a white shirt and a blue shirt and wore it over it.
And they did the pendant. And they did the pendant.
And they threw
and the hair, and the wig. In.
Yeah, I mean, that's because it was like a really quick thing.
Yeah, but I appreciate the effort. But
and you got to appreciate living in Tokyo where you can get all of this in moments' notice right after.
As I learned at Halloween this year.
Yeah.
We should take a quick step back, though, Egan, and mention who the character designer actually is, because I don't think we dropped that name.
Particularly since that person wasn't at the press conference mm-hmm. and is not someone who's really known in the industry, except for one title that even people overseas might have heard of.
Or might not have heard of.
That's true. It's from Capcom EX Troopers game. Mm-hmm. And the person who did those designs, Kisato Mita. And she was the one who was brought aboard Macross Delta.
And that's interesting to note because X Troopers was a PlayStation 3 title that was never released outside of Japan, but was a spin-off of the Lost Planet series, mm-hmm. which is an American-made game. And it was a Japan-only release, a very, very anime-style, cel-shaded. It was very much a third-person shooter in the vein of a little bit of Monster Hunter in there, but it's very much a solo experience with AI as opposed to multiplayer, which was more what Lost Planet 2 was, but that's a whole different story. But to have this Japanese-only entry in a relatively well-known Western franchise then not get released overseas, presumably because it was too... quotation marks anime for the Lost Planet audience. I really liked the opening and character designs of that game, and I noticed them at first because the opening was sung by Mayne, otherwise known as Cheryl Gnome's singing voice. And so I thought this character designer at the time had a lot of talent but was relatively new. I didn't know anything else they'd done. And so when I heard they'd been brought on to Delta, I was fairly optimistic. Because I like the style in EX Troopers, which is very much playing on anime tropes, but there's not much in the way of moe-ish characters. All the female characters look like females, and the dudes are young and energetic, and there's an older, grizzled officer, commanding officer, that kind of thing. Now, compare that to what we saw in Delta, in these two key visuals at least, and the idol unit... Two of the characters in there seem to be a little on the moe side, very much in a maybe mold of Ranker. And the male characters, if that's what they are very much in the pretty boy stereotype. They look very much like something out of, well, Gundam, Iron-Blooded Orphans, or Code Geass, or something like that.
So there's what? Yeah, five, and you're right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Drakens, mm-hmm. five characters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one looks like a woman, but then so did Alto.
It's a good point.
So, the girl characters to me just look like contemporary anime characters. I would not just go, that's the Tsundere character, that's the Moe character, that's, you know, the ecchi character,
mm-hmm.
This is the boy character that's really a girl. I'm not going to go through that. It's just, they look contemporary. We don't know what their personality is, so you can't label them yet.
Mm. It's a fair point. I got almost a kind of Symphogear vibe just with the designs. Did you get that at all? Or?
Only because it's by Satellite, and I think I've said it before when we used to talk about anime before the cast.
Mm-hmm.
Satellite is getting a little bit like Production IG. Anything that comes out of Satellite, boom, you already know it's from Satellite. Symphogear... They did a majority of work on... Satellite did a lot of work on Symphogear, and it shows. So, you look at Gohan's and...
Right.
Madhouse? Madhouse has the same style. Every studio has their own style, and especially with this teaser, it really looked like... It was very familiar.
Right.
It was less fresh and more familiar to me.
What's interesting is because Satellite, when they do Macross, ever since Macross Zero onward, Zero looks different from Frontier. Frontier looks different from Delta. So there may be a studio style, but it either changes or changes with as the production requires it to be. Hence, Kawamori making a point of trying to go for a different character designer for each of the Macross projects, with the exception of bringing in Mikimoto in for 7.
So, the winner of the idol contest which was we mentioned previously, was Minori Suzuki.
Yes.
And she plays one of these idols. We don't know if anyone else from the contest plays any other idol. She plays someone who was featured heavily in the the teaser footage that was shown later on in the announcement. And her character is
Freya Weon. See, once again, I'm not sure about my German. My apologies to people who speak German out there.
Yeah, Freya Weon, if we go by the katakana. And I know that when they first showed that katakana name on screen, Egan, my first thought was Flair. Flair? Is this someone related to
Milan? Flair Genius. That was the only other person who has a similar name. There's a slightly different katakana for that, but it was close enough that we both picked up on that.
But it turns out, well, as far as we know, no. They've just taken this more German influence on the name, perhaps.
It's not the only place. Like, the Var, the name of the syndrome, is named after a Norse Germanic deity. There's the German pronunciation, Warukure, and then it's Siegfried, the name of the variable fighter.
Well, let's take a step back and get back to Freya. But so according to what Kawamori said about her, she's... first of all, he chose the actress because she was very proactive, very energetic, and she came from, as you said, somewhat of a rural-ish area of Japan. The character she's playing is an energetic young girl, surprisingly enough, who travels from a rural or backwater planet in order to, and I quote, pursue her dreams. Pursue her dreams of becoming what? We don't know. Presumably an idol, but is she specifically trying to become a member of the Walküre group? We do not know. But there's a distinct similarity in the actress's character and the character she's playing that Kawamori noted, and I must say, hearing her talk, she very much comes across as a young, fresh, new, very energetic voice actress. Her voice, the minute I heard her talk, I was like, she fits this character.
You mean just her
regular
voice?
Yeah, yes. Because she's not a trained voice actress yet, so it's a lot like when Maya Sakamoto first was in Escafone. She wasn't really acting that much. She was being directed, but she was using her natural voice, whereas as she matured, she started putting on the voice.
Partly because Maya Sakamoto, before she did Escafone, her primary work was doing dubbing for live-action films from the West and stage productions. And so her voice at the time when she did Escaflowne was sounded more, for lack of a better word,
natural.
Yes,
natural. Yeah.
And we actually have heard the character of Freya as her character, not as Minoru Suzuki, but as her character, not in a teaser, but something that would come up later in Tamashi Nations.
Right. She mentioned that they've not actually yet begun recording sessions for the show, which is an indicator of how early on it still is in production, but that she'd been in training, she'd done a few lines for things, which as we would come across later, a couple of days after the announcement. She'd also sung a cover of Do You Remember Love. It's not yet clear why she was singing a cover of Do You Remember Love. That was not her tryout song. When she auditioned, she sang Hoshikira, which was a ranker song from Frontier. So are we looking at another cover for Do You Remember Love for the first episode of this show? Stay tuned, we'll find out. The most interesting thing I found about this actress, though, was that she is very much indicative of the way the different waves of Macross on television bring in different waves of fans and different generations that are involved in the show. She mentioned that when she was in elementary school, she was a huge fan of Macross Frontier. Now she's 18, and she gets to be in the next Macross. And this reminded me so much of Aya Endo and how she originally watched Macross 7 when she was a child, as she discussed with Chia in an interview, and then went on to play Cheryl Gnome years later. Now, the difference between this and that is that there's a shorter time span between the last TV series and the next TV series.
It still amazes me, though. It's been 8 years since Frontier's first premiere episode back in December 2000. Way back, not 2000.
2006.
Yes. 2007. To make sure they get into that anniversary year. Yes.
Right. So we have this new generation of fans, many of whom will be her age. And I think those who grew up watching Frontier, who are even a little older than her, who are now in their 20s, who are going to be who this show is potentially trying to appeal to.
That's right.
In my opinion.
How about we go through what was talked about and then go into the trailer details after? So that, because I think we'll all have a point on
the trailer.
Picking stuff on the trailer.
This is true.
So let's like shotgun through all the points they actually made.
Okay. So what else did we have here? Honestly, we've covered a whole bunch of them here. Let's talk about the male group on the second key visual then. Who are they?
All we know so far is their names. One way to translate it is Aerial Knights of the Kingdom of the Wind. We don't know yet what exactly the Kingdom of the Wind are, or Aerial Knights, although it's worth noting that the name Aerial Knight is the beginning of the title that was previously used for what would become Escaflowne, as well as different elements within the Macross universe. There's this thing, that was called Aerial Knights Chronicles or Midair Calvary Chronicles, which had a bunch of variable fighter designs that eventually became used in Macross, the VF9 Cutlass, as well as designs that evolved drastically to become the designs of Escaflowne. Completely different worldview, or maybe not. We'll see if any of those ideas were pulled from that project to become part of Macross Delta.
I believe it was mentioned specifically that they do fly. They are pilots. They're a pilot group, unlike the girls, who are an idle unit. And it was mentioned that we've got these two groups of characters, a whole bunch of other characters who are potentially not even introduced yet. For example, we may actually not yet know all the pilots of the VF-31s that are behind the idle unit in this key visual image.
So, I would safely say we haven't, given that there's at least five of them in the key visual. We haven't met all of the pilots yet.
Yeah. So it was noted that the potential for love triangles is immense. In fact, Tengen also noted closer to the end of the presentation that, as Kawamori had pointed out previously, he wanted to return to Valkyrie on Valkyrie action, and Tengen said that since we ostensibly here have two different teams, two squads of Valkyries, he said, plus all these characters, making this show is an immense task. He said it was a lot of work. Going back to the Aerial Knights, though, it was mentioned that... Well, hang on, before we get into that, we haven't even mentioned what the problem is that's... this syndrome that you mentioned previously.
It's called Vow Syndrome, and it literally is consuming the galaxy, or figuratively consuming the galaxy.
So there's this syndrome which seems to be the problem, and the girls who are part of this tactical sound force are supporting a Valkyrie team who are trying to, well, get to the bottom of this and also probably put down riots, because the kanji used for the name of this thing, like it's called the Varu virus, but syndrome, but the kanji used basically can be translated as berserk or berserker. So could this be something not dissimilar to the way, you know, Zentradi get when their emotions aren't suppressed? Or could it be like Macross 30, where the proximity of the ruins to Zentradi and humans made them go berserk? Either way, this is the main threat facing the galaxy. And there's that, you've got the girls, you've got the VF-31s, and then from the side, you get these Aerial Knights, who no one really knows what their motivation is, what it is they want. We don't even know where they are. They come from, what was it, the Kingdom of the Wind, right?
Yes.
And Kawamori kind of let it slip. He's like, you know, well, there's going to be these competing ways of thought, differences in culture. He said, between, you know, different kingdoms, different planets. Oh, and then they quickly kind of backed off from the fact he'd said planets with a plural. So this could be a larger conflict. These people might not even be on the same planet, these groups, as far as we know. So that's the bulk of what was covered in the key visuals. We were introduced to Minori Suzuki, introduced to the character of Freya. Then we went into the toys. And there were already prototypes for the Chogokin of the Draken and the Siegfried, the VF-31 Siegfried.
Yeah. Leading up to the event, Tengen had kind of alluded that the GX Chogokin was being prepared. He didn't say that they were this far into the development. So, and I was only expecting to see the Siegfried after that was announced, because we didn't even know the number of the Valkyrie yet until the night before, which it leaked because somebody saw some of the Tamashii Nation's
billboards
and maps that were being put up for Tamashii Nations the night before the broadcast. So we got to learn that a little bit early. This the VF-31, and so I was expecting to see that as soon as we saw that it was called the Siegfried. But the fact that they had the Draken, I was like, wow, they're really on the ball, which makes sense because they weren't on the ball for Frontier. And we've gone over that before in the past, and we'll get on a little bit about that later.
Right. So, they seem to be in a very refined or advanced state of development. And during the presentation, however, even Kawamori and Tengen noted that these are the only current prototypes, and that when they handled them, they were really scared of breaking them, because if anything got dropped or broken, you know, they had guys literally all in black with gloves come out to carry those off the stage.
Stage ninjas.
Stage ninjas. So they talked about the Valkyries a little bit, and let's quickly touch on these. So we've got, first of all, that blue and white Valkyrie from that first key visual image we talked about two podcasts ago, which is the VF-31 Siegfried. The first thing that jumped out to me, of course, was the name Siegfried. Why? Because this is not the first time this name has been used. It was Rion Sakaki's call sign in Macross 30, and if anyone bought the YF-30 toy, it has Siegfried tampoed along the leg. Mm-hmm. Very, very obviously. Why the decision to reuse the name? We don't know. There's the obvious lineage of development from the 30 to the 31, much like, say, a YF-21 to a VF-22. Why have they named the Valkyrie after the test pilot of the previous version's call sign? Is there a connection? We don't know. But what did you guys think upon seeing the VF-31?
Well, going into it, everyone, and even I usually don't kind of get into it, but I was like, yeah, it'll be based heavily on the 30. As far as the DX Chogokin is concerned, because Bandai is probably putting a good amount of money in there, and they want to save money by keeping it manageable and reusing molds as much as possible. And we learned that that wasn't the case, because apparently Kawamori, the guideline was to use the 30 as the base, you know, basically the base structure, and build upon it. Where Kawamori went and changed, aside from probably the joints, 100%.
He tweaked and iterated and tweaked and iterated, and eventually it became something a lot more different than poor Bandai was expecting.
And yeah. Similar to how the YF-19, it has a basic general transformation scheme as the VF-19 custom or the VF-19 F and S, you can't really reuse all that many parts because there's so many differences in the shape and designs. So,
of course, the biggest difference to the shape is it's gone to front-swept, forward-swept wings, which, I don't know, personally, I think, A, that forward-swept wings are a little overplayed since the last major hero Valk we had was the YF-29 in the second Frontier movie. And since then we've gotten like the toy of the VF-19, the 19 Advance. That design seems a little overdone to me at this point, personally.
One possibility is that this might have been a thematic choice to do it, because this being Macross Delta, how do you create two different fighters that have some form of a Delta wing on it and yet make them distinctive from each other? And even though it has four sweat wings, it is off a delta wing on a Siegfried, and this Draken also has a delta wing. But if you see them against the sky, you can instantly tell which of the two is flying.
No. But are you saying you're kind of tired of seeing it being the hero Valkyrie? Because we don't even know whose Valkyrie is the side that's actually going to play more towards the hero side.
That's a good point. I guess as a main Valkyrie. Yeah.
Because you watch Plus and you have different camps. You either like the 19 or you like the 21. And this one, you can tell... The one that Kyle Mori's probably put a lot more into is that Draken.
Mm. The other thing, of course, is it's broken naming conventions, hasn't it? Because all the forward swept wings were mostly nine, ended
mostly
with a nine.
All of them, but mostly.
Yeah. Mostly in the 19 to 29, the nine. Mm-hmm. But now we've got a 31, so that breaks with convention. So, either way, there's a few new gimmicks to this Valkyrie which look very interesting.
Oh, which I really like, stylistically, yes.
I was going to say, before I go to that, Adrian, you mentioned how the design was supposed to be more like the 30, but ended up being quite different. Mm-hmm. Even Tengen was like, during his presentation, he said, you kept changing it. And Kawamori said, I kind of felt bad for Bandai. They had a rough time of it. And Tengen kind of made a joke of this. He was like, so you were actually aware you were making it difficult for them, right? And he's like, I know. Which was kind of funny. But then Kawamori kind of got his own back regarding these new weapons, which... Describe these for me, Egan. What is this main gimmick in the 31, which...
Swing around internal gun pods that pop up from the forearms in either fighter or battery mode.
And they were referred to, kind of off the cuff, as Tonfa. The Tonfa guns.
And they look like them, and that's what makes them visually distinctive. Like, I was worried whether they would look different enough from the YF-30 in all of the modes. That gives us something distinctive in terms of the silhouette and profile.
It could also make for some interesting potential close quarters combat, which isn't really melee focused. Hell, it could go John Wick.
Which is not unprecedented. We've got the bayonets dating back to the VF-11 and then the knives that we had on the VF-25. So a little melee could be in order.
There's, of course, the question of what is the point of these gun tonfa. Having these gun tonfa doesn't necessarily rule out holding a gun pod. So
particularly since in the teaser we did see something on the hand. We don't know what it is. Probably a gun pod, but we don't know.
Also, so we don't know the in-universe reason, and much like the different colored trails on the Valkyries in the first image, I'm sure someone, Kawamori or otherwise, will come up with an in-universe reason for them and layer it over the top.
Aging Dr. Chiba.
Exactly. However, the real-world reason for them existing is that Kawamori kind of blames Tengen, because apparently he showed Tengen the design, and Tengen was like, oh, okay, so you're just going with regular gunpod. I see. And Kawamori was just like, well, fine. I'll design something new then. So he kind of blames Tengen for the fact that he put these gun tonfa into the 31. But Tengen claims he's twisting the facts. So there was a lot of this good-natured banter during the talk show, which was fun like that.
It's nice because you've got someone who's the original creator of the Valkyries and someone who grew up loving the Valkyries, whose fan page of Valkyrie pictures, was what led him into becoming an actual Macross creator. Having the interplay, what a original creator likes versus what a fan likes, putting them two together.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's Tengen's experience as an MC and narrating, but he does play off Kawamori really well, because I notice if you put a bunch of the old school guys on stage together, they give each other crap, but they don't have that really good-natured back-and-forth banter that I find you get with Tengen and Kawamori. It tends to be more half-accusatory. Like, I've been to a talk show with Onogi complaining... Well, with Izubuchi and Onogi... No. So Onogi, complaining about Kawamori and Izubuchi and all these mecha designers. And it's quite interesting. But it was some good interplay there. But shall we move on to the Draken?
Yes.
Yeah.
What a different looking Valkyrie this is. Personally, I really like it, but what are your thoughts?
It doesn't jump out on me. it doesn't jump out to me on paper, mm-hmm. but seeing the DX Shogokin
pops.
Yeah, it's it's really nice.
Have you ever had something that had that kind of gold trim on a blue? Even though there was that VF-19S, but has there ever been anything with that kind of color scheme?
No, and it's almost romantic, like the design and the color and the edges, and it's just going away from how you're saying swept forward wing or everything. I mean, we're not even getting the double thruster feed in the back.
Yes. Yeah. One thing we noticed when we went to Time Machine Nations, and even though we're not allowed to take pictures, definitely looked through the exhaust, definitely saw two thrusters.
Yeah.
Thruster ports.
So it does have two thrusters. It is not a single engined.
Well,
yeah. Well, like we're presuming that is the legs folded together.
Yes. And worth noting also that on the Chokogen prototype, the single tail fin at the back, we saw it splits in half. At least I saw it splits in half. So if those two parts splits into two legs, draw your conclusions from there.
So why the speculation here? Of course, the VIF-31 has been shown in Batroid, in Gerwalk. The Draken, however, has only been shown in fighter mode, and very little has even been shown of the underside. In the trailer, you see it very briefly in low resolution as they bank.
Fortunately, people who went to the Tamashii Nations event got to look around.
Yeah, we could examine the prototype.
And it definitely looks like it has a pretty big gun pod.
Oh, huge gun pod.
It's about this length of the underside of the plane.
So big that there's actually a hinge on the fin on the bottom of it. So presumably, if you had to land it, you have space for landing gear.
And one side of it, and I don't know what kind of weapon it is. It could be a case for a sword, for all I know, though I'm presuming it's not. But one side of the gun is slightly curved because the belly of the Draken is completely smooth but slightly outward curving, so it fits flush up against it. So it really looks like a piece of art as engineering or engineering.
What was amazing is like we had the YF-21, amazing smooth underbelly in the original design. You can't really pull that off in a real toy. So Yamato's did not have the smooth underbelly that the original design did, but this Chogokin of the Draken 3, amazing, like a certain character would say from Walking Dead, dolphin smooth.
Dolphin smooth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, it's a beautiful aerodynamic craft.
So they're hiding the transformation sequence because that is obviously a gimmick. It's something there. It's a sales point. But they're also hiding on the 31 something that we haven't mentioned.
You noted that Tengen's said something. You know, Tengen is basically us asking the questions we want to ask Kawamori. And like you said, he pointed out something about the cockpit.
Oh, the fact that it's covered?
Completely, yeah.
Right. So this ties in partly with the color scheme. Again, we're talking about the Draken here. Because it's got this gold trim and these rather fancy inlay motifs, it is obviously supposed to represent the fact it comes from a kingdom. The color scheme looks more Escaflowne than Macross. And I think if you compare the Valk side by side, it very much looks like something from an old school monarchy or kingdom versus something from the modern world. The designs are very indicative of that.
If any of you have the book Kawamori Design Works or the exhibition book that came out for his recent exhibition, both of those and a couple other places have his designs for the Aerial Knight Chronicles, Sky Calvary Chronicles. Those have designs that have harken very similar to this.
And of course, one part of this was that the cockpit is covered. So we're not sure how these things are flown, whether it's sensory input like a 21, whether it's a 360-degree cockpit like in Charles Counterattack. But the important thing is on top of this closed area of the cockpit, first of all, this could affect the way it transforms because the pilot doesn't need to be anywhere in particular. But second of all, every Valkyrie is marked with some kind of herald or logo where the cockpit is covered. So it's almost like you can see if it transforms like with the nose like a normal Valkyrie, the actual marking for each pilot would be in the chest. So every single cockpit has some, it's almost like a family coat of arms or something.
Yes, they're okay, all distinctive insignia, emblem, coat of arms. We don't know what they are.
Yeah, but it very much ties in with this whole idea of it being from a kingdom.
Yes,
which is quite
part of a knighthood, cavalry. That's the literal translation of the word used for this particular team of pilots.
Right. Now, jumping back to the, and I apologize for jumping around, but we forgot to mention the thing on the 31. Of course, being an evolution of the 30, it has some kind of pod in the back. Now, the 30, of course, had this pop-up missile pod, otherwise known as a pack of eggs, otherwise known as some stadium lights. This time around, we don't know what it is.
I made a specific point when we went to the Time Machine Nations. We got to take the pictures at the bottom side when the Batroid mode, Gerwag mode, and fighter mode. And in all the Batroid mode, it's not there. You see it on the fighter and Gerwag mode, that extension, the modular unit, but we don't see it on either the giant, larger than a basketball player statue of the Batroid of Siegfried, or the tiny, relatively smaller Tukulkan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not on the silhouette of the modes.
But we see something pop up behind the head when it transforms in the very last sequence of the teaser trailer.
Speaking of which, so shall we get to the teaser? There was a 90... So, of course, the culmination of all this, and this is... We are now probably into about 38 minutes of content of a 45-minute presentation. We got a 90-second teaser.
Which they didn't say that it was going to be one, so... Yeah. It was nice icing to the of the cake.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't expecting anything at all in animated form, and... where do we begin? It showed characters that weren't in the key visuals, which looked like they could possibly be main characters. In particular, there was a blue-haired
the very
boy.
First person we see in the teaser trailer. Yes.
Now, doing something a main character would probably be doing. In
a Macross series.
In a Macross series. Yeah. Somewhere up high, doing something to cause attention where the girl's going to walk by and be like, "What are you doing?"
You can imagine Isamu doing that. You can imagine Alta doing that. You can imagine Shin doing that.
Yeah. They all do something just odd. But, I don't know. Don't know if that's him.
Well, there was a character. Yeah. There's also what appears to be a red-headed female pilot, because she's wearing some sort of pilot suit.
And she had the big ears.
Right.
So, which kind of ears are they?
We would like to know, wouldn't we?
They don't look Zentradi to me. I would say they're Zolan.
They look Zolan. Yeah. They look Zolan to me. Yeah.
And reminder that there's not just the humans and Zentradi in the galaxy. Yes.
And this wouldn't be the first time Zolans have popped up post Dynamite 7. But yeah, she obviously had some kind of pilot suit. And those two character designs were far more in line with what I was expecting from the character designer, more than the idol unit. If you look at that female design, it really resembles one of her designs for EX Troopers.
Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Because that Capcom game was primarily of the military folks, mm-hmm. as opposed to idols that we see. Now we see there's a bit of variance to her character design, which is good.
It also kind of makes you think, are these two key visuals, which may not even be showing any of the main characters, is this potentially some sort of fake-out? Are we being shown the Diamond Force as a key visual image without Basara or Milen?
Which is possible. Macross 7, when it first came out, they designed it so deliberately. All the promotion before gave you no idea of what was, who was piloting the Valkyrie and all the other things that shocked everyone when the first episode came out. Mm. So we might be getting something of that, of an opposite nature, because as we said, Kyle Murray specifically said, these are not the pilots, the singers.
I just want to ask a question regarding the character announcement.
Mm-hmm.
Did they just announce her as the main character designer, or
They announced her as the original character designer.
Yeah.
So someone else is adapting the designs as you do for animation?
In fact, they named the two people who are not only the animation character designer, but also the chief animation directors.
Okay.
So they'll be involved heavily in the production.
I don't know, because when I look at the Momoko-ish kind of characters, I can see that that's probably... You know, her doing a take on something else where this character in the center is kind of resembling the character you were mentioning that was in the trailer. She's a little bit more rough around the edges opposed to the cuter ones.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at this...
She's pointing out pilots...
The male pilots?
The male pilots. When I look at that...
Or female pilots. Or both.
Every time I look at it, I was like, what is it that reminds me of? And like the style of dress is like... Kogias, or even the most recent anime where it's the kingdom coming back down to battling with Earth. What was that one called? I gave up watching it. You finished it.
Yes, I did.
I'm
completely blanking on the name. But
regardless.
Yeah.
But now that I'm looking at these characters, they remind me of how they turned the Titania characters... that were designed from Mikimoto into animatable characters for this day and age.
I can see that resemblance in one or two of them. I'm not sure if I can see it in all of them.
Especially for the guy in the background of the glasses.
Here and here, I can see maybe.
So, it's like, I don't know. I see a little bit of a... I'm not saying... I don't think they're showing all their cards right now, but...
We should mention
that's my guess.
The two character designers who are reworking the original character designs... Majiro and Yu Shindo. Majiro worked on Barakamon and Ongaku Shoujo. Yu Shindo worked on My Teen Romantic Comedy Snafu and Persona Fold, the Golden Animation.
Yeah.
So they're of the more recent anime series the last couple of years.
Yeah. Anyways, that was just something that this comes out to me. To where I can actually, design-wise, they just look like polar opposites. They don't look like a different take by the same character. Designer, it looks like two different designers.
And I'll be honest, the only ones which resemble the style I've seen in the past are the ones that aren't on those key visual images.
So
we see some of the guys in this trailer as well. We see, of course, multiple shots of Freya looking very Genki, jumping up and down, doing Genki looking things, having that two-tone color highlight in her hair, much like modern satellite characters.
Yeah.
And we see a bunch of CG. In particular, before we get to the stuff that really impressed me, the surprising stuff was some Regolts.
Some Glog. Destroids, based off the Cheyenne, which isn't exciting to me. the Zentradi stuff, I want Destroids. I want big, hearty, chunky Destroids that get blown up.
Maybe the idols could be piloting the Destroids. Destroids awesome. Support Valkyrie squadrons. Why can't the idols be the...
I think that's why the Konig monster got so much love, is because that was the only big chunky thing that we got. That was a Destroid, pretty much.
Right.
And something from one of the old games.
So we saw a brief shot for that. And my initial take on that was... maybe this is a flashback sequence, maybe this is a training simulator. However, looking at that trailer more closely, the environment they are in is the environment that the two unannounced characters are talking in afterwards. So, who knows what's going on there? You know, is this the syndrome corrupting people, bringing back old Zentradi, much like the Zeon Remnants coming back in Gundam Unicorn? I don't know. Yeah, it was just a surprise to see them there. Yeah, we have no idea what it means.
Yeah, but they were, aside from the Glog, the battle pods, or the Regolts, they were not exactly original design. They had almost that turret that's on the armored VF-25 that's on the side of the wings, kind of the big ball with the one single turret on it. Had something like that on it. So, it was a modified Regal, so it's not just the same one.
Mm. Similar to how they modified the female power suits to put them into Frontier, as well as the Macross 7 movie.
True.
There's variants they can throw in. Yeah.
And I'm not going to speculate whether it was a, you know, what is it? What was it you were saying?
A dream sequence or a training simulator or...
Yeah, I'm not going to go into training simulators or anything like that. I just look at the footage the same way I looked at the original Frontier teaser footage.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when they showed that teaser footage at the Min-May Meets Firebomber concert...
Wow.
It was all changed by the time we got to the Culture Edition. It looked nothing like what we saw. It was the same animation. It was the same camera angles. It was everything that was set up for that same shot. But what they showed didn't have any armor on it. And that was Ozma's armored Valkyrie. That was in the first episode. The teaser footage only showed it without the armor packs, and it was also a totally different color scheme. It was actually white with blue, and that looked amazing. And they had the Vajra, and they go in the asteroid field. They showed some little bit of characters, and when you got to the show, totally nothing different. Ronka had different color hair. Everything was changed because it was test footage.
I think that's why a lot of some of us here have a different reaction than other people, because we've seen something similar to this before for Frontier, and if we can even go back to Macross Plus and Macross Zero. Those also had test footage shown to a limited public, be it a concert or be it a one-time-only event. And with the footage they showed, ended up having marked differences. Like, there was a sequence in the Macross Zero test footage that was shown at a at Anime Expo that showed a fighter that that was completely different from the SV-51 that would later show up in the first episode of Macross Zero. Same thing goes back to Plus and 7. There was also test footage different from what was eventually shown.
Yeah.
The big difference here is that practically anyone in the world can see this test footage. So people are making comments not necessarily of something that will eventually be in the final project.
Also, the fact it was mentioned before they played this that this was teaser footage, this was unfinished footage. This was so they had something to show. So it's not meant to be a trailer announcing the series. This is a teaser, something. It could all almost be conceptual. We don't know.
Yes.
The main point of this streaming announcement show was to unveil the artwork, the artist, the winner of the contest.
Yes.
It was not to show a trailer.
Good point.
That was just something extra. They're throwing it out there and to get a reaction to kind of gauge what people think. Not as far as how the finished product will be, but you know, you're right, Egan, how they've done it in the past. But in the past, we didn't have all this streaming stuff, and the world wasn't connected so much. And
yes.
You go back to that Min-May Firebomber concert, you had to have been here to see that trailer projected. And the only way people knew about it was if you went to the show.
Where they tell you.
You go back, and I was the one that went on Macross World and tried to describe that trailer. And the part where the Vajra are trying to escape from the asteroid field and throwing out all those the chaff stuff, which looks like when it explodes, it looked like tentacles exploding. And I was like, yeah, like there are these things, we're throwing out these tentacles. And that just went to a whole nother, like, Orotsuka Doji thing. And everyone was like, tentacles? What? Why are there tentacles in Macross? So you kind of had all this negative stuff going on at a much lower level because you had to be a member on the forums. But people were saying outlandish stuff just by me trying to describe what I saw once and only once, just by going like what I remember.
Yes.
And in the first episode, that stuff was actually left in, and then the Vajra never used it ever again. So it was probably something they rendered out, didn't like it, and they just didn't use it ever again.
And it was fairly obvious from the Valkyrie action we did see, limited action we did see in this teaser, that they were using a lot of the same motion data.
Yeah.
For the Valkyrie, so the camera angles were obviously being reused from like Zero and Frontier.
That's why I was saying it looked more familiar than new, because a lot of it was stuff from the movies, and they did it in the movies. You watch one of the movies, they they had that one scene from the first episode where Alto comes in. Well, Alto's not the pilot, but when the VF-25 comes in, it sweeps around. Mm-hmm. They reused that same shot in space. So they're doing the same thing. They may tweak the path line and the animation path just a little bit. But that's not the shot you're probably going to see again. Mm. Because it's just something they went to do. Okay, let's see what this thing looks like when it's flying. Let's see what it's all just experimental test footage to see how the models look, how the textures are doing. All that stuff has to be tested. In between the last time they did a Frontier movie, advancements in texture mapping, placement mapping, all that stuff changes, and they're going to try it a different way. So that's all it was. You know, they're going to throw a different background up there. Look good.
Right. We also saw more character animation, an idle-looking character with big Minmay glasses looking at a very Frontier-style electronic billboard for the Wild Cure. And we saw a castle of sorts, which ties into the kingdom motif.
It was the first thing that was shown right after they said, the Aerial Knights of the Kingdom went. Yes.
So their architecture is looking almost Vampire Hunter D-ish. Why? We don't know. Is this monarchy, does this predate human colonization, or is it just a spin-off from a colony? Of course, we are hearing that this is all set planetside. This was explicitly said in the presentation that this did not take place on a colony, nor did they say it was only one planet, so we don't know what the story is there.
I noted one thing. Calamari, during the Tamashii Nations, signed a couple of things and drew some art. On the autographs he did, the signature he did, he wrote, Kaze to Valkyrie to Macross. Wind, Valkyrie, and Macross. Oh, he wrote, actually, Megami, but then we've seen from the teaser that Megami, which normally means goddesses, songstresses, they put in, pronounce it, Valkyrie.
Right, yeah. Right. So the end of this teaser, of course, came up with what was even more of a surprise than having any footage, and that was there is going to be a TV special on December 31st. It is going to be a TV special where they unveil more details, they have some kind of a talk show, and they show an almost finished version of Episode 1.
Even then, they were saying, there's word I hear that... No, they kind of couched the way they describe whether or not it's going to be on there. But...
but yeah, it was announced, and the way it was phrased as well was like, will it be complete Episode 1? It'll be almost complete. And the MC was like, well, we're not just talking about a 10-minute segment or an extended trailer. And they said, no, it'll be one
almost.
Episode.
Just all but complete.
Yeah. All but complete. Yeah. And since then, if you look at the text on the website, they've started calling it the director's cut, which is kind of backwards. Isn't the director's cut what comes after the first cut?
We sort of had that before with Frontier, so we've got a hint of how they're going to roll it out.
And this is interesting because for Frontier, we all know they did that because they want to make the anniversary year and they were running late on rolling the series out. So my take on it was originally, if they were going to announce something like this, it's not necessarily a good thing because it means they're still a ways off. In fact, if they are barely pushing to get this one episode finished, it shows you how early they are. I don't think a single vocal song exists yet, that's for sure. And we must note that there was no composer mentioned. We don't know who's doing the music. We don't know who did the piece of music
for
the trailer.
Teaser.
In the teaser. So they are really, really, considering how much they showed, they're still a lot earlier on than I think people realize. And I think the pressure was on them to show as much as they could, because there was a lot crammed into this presentation, because they have so many companies behind them this time around. I'm sure there are there's a lot of pressure on Big West, on Satellite, on Kawamori, and Tengen and crew. But I guess we will know on December 31st.
Indeed, we will.
Or, for those in the Macross fan club, there is going to be a draw, and a lucky select few will get to go to a preview screening of Episode 1. which will be on December 26th. Of course, Macross Speaker Podcast crew will all be trying to get into that. I'm not sure how many, if any of us will, but if we do, you can guarantee we will spoil the heck out of that episode before it airs 5 days later.
Reasons why the broadcast was at 12 noon. One main reason is that was during the lunchtime, so that the people that probably are more familiar with Macross at this point have jobs. And if they have this broadcast in the evening, most people don't go home on time, they're on a train, or they have to go to after work drinking stuff. There's a lot less freedom after you get off work, and it's a lot harder to get home. So having it broadcast in the regular evening, I think, is too much of a trouble. So they did in daytime, where people can go to lunch, get some in the convenience store, sit down and see the presentation all on their smartphones and laptops, or their cheap laptops, company issued laptops.
Oh, don't talk to me about
that. Okay. Was it Toshiba or Panasonic? Those square Panasonic laptops everyone has.
Welcome to my life.
Yeah. Anyways, and also it was done in the afternoon because it was in conjunction with the Tamashii Nations 2015 and the press night, because just a few hours following that event, they went and moved the Draken and everything over to Akihabara. And they could have been broadcasting out of Akihabara.
I believe they
Should
were.
Should we explain what Tamashii Nations is first?
We've talked about it before on the podcast.
So it's basically a show where upcoming products, or potential upcoming products.
Specifically the toy side of Bandai. But as opposed to the model kits, this is all about the toys aimed at the adult collectors.
Yeah, and that is their, you know, their figure art stuff, mostly posable figures. Saint Seiya stuff's in there. It's heavily promoted. Macross, a lot of Gundam, all their Robot Damashii stuff, their high grade stuff. And they, every time they have it, they'll usually pick an animation to be the front animation thing, or they'll have a special, you know, prize, not prize, they'll have like a special Chotsky thing for when you enter and you pay. They've done it when Tiger and Bunny was big. Tiger and Bunny was like the big thing. Saint Seiya usually gets more chances to come around because of the popularity for that, or it's Gundam. And this time Macross was at the forefront because of Delta. And so after the broadcast, we didn't have and didn't get the press invite. We waited too late to get one, so we just went to Akihabara to get some food. And that's always how these stories end up happening, is right when we give up, we just go somewhere, and then somebody sends us a message. And at that point, I went to go pay a bill, which was at the post office underneath where they're having the event. And on the way there, you said that they had changed the Tokyo Anime Center shop. There used to be the big VF1J and the idol announcement.
This is a wall-sized VF1J, which we've pointed out in the past because they update it to note where the next Macross major event is going to happen. Now, that was completely gone, and in its place was a different variant of the artwork of the VF31 Siegfrieds, which are wall-sized.
Yeah.
And you haven't seen it yet if you've only seen the key visuals that were posted on the web and from the presentation. This was slightly altered the composition, same vehicles, same Siegfried, but in a different orientation, so you can see more of it than what you saw in the visuals.
Yeah. And so Gwen said that, I think Tanya must put a picture, so you saw
Someone put it up, yeah.
So you told me about it. So we all happened to meet back up in front of the post office. I said, well, we're going up, and we're going to go check to see if they changed it. So we went up there, and everyone's outside because they're doing the whole press. So there's a table outside the entrance. You have to go up, get your badge or your guest badge. And we walk up, and you can see all these people just kind of mingling around. And we saw Tenjin talking to a group of people. So I went straight to the board. To the wall, looked at it, I was like, wow, this thing's pretty cool. And you could see these huge, detailed illustrations of the all the VF-31s.
Mm-hmm. So, let's jump ahead to the... Let's just pull these experiences, because I wasn't with you guys then. I went the following day. I dropped by briefly on Saturday, but I didn't really go in full until Sunday.
Yeah.
So... I've only been to a handful of Tamashii Nations because normally the macro stuff is minimal. But this time, first of all, there was a special ticket you could buy which came with a little die-cast VF-1J.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I wanted that as well. And when you go in, and first of all, you're in this walkway. Can someone tell me what this walkway is?
I think it's supposed to be the corridor that Grace and Cheryl go through, or maybe it's just the standard corridor you board on any of the Macross ships.
Because at the very end of that tunnel, what you see is the one probably familiar UN Spacey red symbol.
Yeah. Right, and there were some screens in this corridor which were supposed to be like windows and would randomly play scenes of space and explosions and a battle going on outside. And you get to the end of this, and what's in front of you, as you said, Egan, a UN Spacey logo, owned and copyrighted by Big West. And to each side of it was one of the new prototype Valkyries, the Draken on one side, the fully transformed VF-31 on the other, and a giant screen above it playing the, first of all, the Delta teaser over and over, and also a new CG movie of the VF-31 transforming.
It's okay. The first time any of us had seen the transformation sequence for the VF-31.
Okay, let me go back. You go through that corridor. That corridor is probably about it's about 20 feet, I'd say, give or take. And so there's about, as you walk through, there's at least five windows on each side, which are just screens showing space, like you're saying, the explosions. Then when you get out, when you get past that 20 feet, there's the two being displayed. The screen is behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice that on both sides of the screen were the main cannons of the STF-1?
I don't think I even noticed that.
Nope, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, if you... The side between... The screen was between the two cannons of the TV version of the STF-1.
Wow.
So I was like, I went in and I looked at every little thing.
You know, when they took that all, disassembled it after the exhibition.
So
I wonder where they are now.
And the guy that snuck those pictures, one of the pictures shows the cannons.
Okay.
So if you go back to that guy's Twitter page, there's a picture where there's an open door and the cannon is laying on the floor inside. So I already kind of knew to look for it. So mm-hmm. I think that's why because it's so high up in the air, you don't notice it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no, that's true.
But, they show the trailer. One thing I'll say, they were showing a high-res version of the trailer not a streaming version of this trailer. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot more detail in those test footage.
A decent small theater screen, movie screen.
Yeah.
So it was wonderful to see.
So a lot of people that were saying, oh, this looks like video game footage, it didn't look like that. It still wasn't what it should be because it's test footage, but it looked a hell of a lot better than what you saw on the computer or on your smartphone device. Then after that played, they showed a Chogokin trailer for the DX Chogokin for the 31. And it was a 3D wireframe of the toy, so which it turns around and it shows like the basic transformation of how it should transform, whether it was done out of CAD or whatever software. And within that modeling software, they did animate it, but it wasn't like satellite animation. It was animated by whoever was doing that teaser using the toy data.
But it was eye-opening just to see the transformation sequence confirm that it borrows elements from Kronos, the YF-30, but has its own unique touches added all over the place.
Yeah, and regarding the Draken, when you finally looked at the Draken, we're all saying that one looked, you can tell the Draken was finished. That is probably what the toy's going to come out to be. Mm-hmm. Everything was smooth, everything lined up in fighter mode. There was all kinds of details, panel lines, whatever. When you got to the Siegfried, that is still basically what it's going to look like in all three modes, but the joint systems weren't there. It was just a static three modes.
Yes.
So
it's worth noting, I'm not sure how many people picked it up, but there was a slide that was shown during the presentation that said both of them are going to be coming out in the fall of 2016. We don't know if that indicates when the series is going to come out, but that's their plan for Bandai to release these toys.
Yeah.
So the first thing I want to point out here is, as I said, as someone who doesn't normally pay much attention to Tamashii Nations because of the lack of Macross stuff, 60-70% of this show floor of this robot hall was Macross themed. This is an unprecedented amount of Macross coverage for the event. It is an unprecedented amount of synergy for the franchise between the toy companies and the show and the announcements. This has all been highly orchestrated. You know, Macross is always, people in the West compare it to Gundam and Transformers. Macross is an underdog. It is a niche franchise. And we talk about it a lot because we're in the center of it. We're in the thick of it. And there has been a boom with Frontier. But it is still very much not a household name. So to see this amount of coverage was just awe-inspiring.
When Bandai releases its financial results, it lists the top franchises for it, usually. Gundam, Saint Seiya, Dragon Ball, Sailor Moon. Macross doesn't appear anywhere close to that top five. But to see that much space devoted this year,
and what makes it more clear is, you know, you walk in, you know, people are looking, like three or four people are looking at Draken, three or four people are looking at Siegfried, and there's a path. You're supposed to walk a certain way. You're supposed to go to your right. You go past this, you go past this as a Macross, you go past that Macross, you go past this, you do this, a little bit of interaction. There's this little stage thing, and when I went through, there was maybe 12 or 15 people watching the stage thing. And I almost walked out, and I'm like, oh wait, there's more. I went back to where the Gundam thing is, and there's a queue to look at every damn Gundam thing.
So the Macross stuff was fairly, well, not empty, but it was not, there wasn't a queue.
Yeah, people were either like taking their time to look at the Macross stuff, but the people that really go to Tamashii Nations are there to go find out what's new with Gundam.
And it was crammed in with Dunbar, with Pat Labor, with Saint Seiya. All that was in that tiny little, not tiny, but much smaller area than Macross had this year.
And that had a queue. Like, I wanted to see they showed a giant robo OVA toy, and I wanted to go and look at it up close, and I was just, I'm not standing on that line.
So you get this main opening area with the Draken, the 31, the movie, the teaser footage, and I think we all spent at least 20 minutes looking at the Draken, looking at the underside and looking at, it was slightly mistransformed because the air intakes were not quite aligned on each side from what I could see, but it looked gorgeous. So you go from there and you go straight into the High Metal R lineup, which has both High Metal R and the other Bandai, other Chogokins they had there, right? They were kind of mixed.
Oh, it was a display. Mix of High Metal R and Chogokin, because they're not doing, a lot of people, I think everything that was represented was for High Metal R, but it's a mix.
It's a mix.
It was officially called in the map they have the All Macross History Corner. So it was like it was a fragmented timeline showing all the different Macross projects, with a toy or two for each one.
And it must be pointed out, something that many of these low resolution photographs don't show is that a lot of the stuff on display here was 3D printed prototype. It wasn't transformable, it was cobbled together, but much like in this day and age, streaming means that everyone gets to see the test footage. Now, 3D printing means every company can put something to actually show as opposed to putting a photograph of a prototype there. So we had high metal R of the VF4. We had, of course, as you mentioned, Adrian, the 2SS and the 2SS with a Leo on it. I mean, a SAP. What else did we have?
You had a 0A.
Yes.
And each display had the acrylic figure. It's not a figure. It's like almost like
plastic standee.
It's this little clear plastic cutout of the character, whatever songstress was for each show.
Right.
So for the I think for 0, they had a Mal and a Sarah. Of course, there's an Ishtar. Basura or whatnot. Minmay. They actually had the wrong Minmay for Flashback.
Hmm.
Do you remember Love Minmay?
And it was the Flashback VF4, which is
important. And it was the Flashback VF4 color scheme. And how you're saying 3D printed. So the only ones that were representing the high metal arc scale were 2, Macross 2, mm-hmm. 0. Mm-hmm. And
Flashback,
as far as the actual toys, the Flashback 1 and the 0 were just static fighter models. There was no transformation gimmick at all. It was just something they put up, painted, and then displayed it. So you can pretty much say, other than just following the line art in fighter mode, there's no development on the actual toy.
Mm.
The VF2SS looks ready to roll. I mean,
it was the only one that was in Batroid mode of all of them. Yeah,
had very interesting transformation gimmicks to make it look as pretty good as it did. Even how I'm forgiving for the Evolution toy one, because it's Bandai, and we went through this before, where it's like, you can't be so hard on one company because they're not Bandai. So yeah, I stuck to that. I looked at it and I was like, I'm gonna buy this, but I don't like the hip joints, because Bandai, you can fix that, you can figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't expect them to. That's just what I was thinking. But that one's pretty much ready to go. Hopefully they'll change a couple more things. Actually, found out they are still working on it. That is not the final version, and the person I spoke to actually mentioned some of the stuff I wanted to see changed, because he's actually a fan of Macross 2, was noticing these are a little bit off, they should be a little bit bigger here, don't really like this part of it. And I was like, they got the right guy on this. So and then the rest were like DX Chogokins, the Fire Valk, which
was completely 3D printed.
Yep, but it's DX Chogokin. So that wasn't a high metal R one. Mm-hmm. Even though they already made a high metal version of it, they were showing the bigger one. They had the Frontier movie versions, and then they had the high metal R's that are either have already come out, that are going to be out in the next couple months, what's coming out next year, and you know, they're already showing the Glog, which is slated to come out, I think, in May.
That looked great.
Yeah, that's really cool. And
the Regolts were there.
And those have new tangent art.
Really good looking tangent art.
Yeah. And in the very corner of that display, they had this kind of poster showing all the different high metal R's that, you know, that are up for consideration by Bandai, possibly making them into high metal R's. So they want feedback. So they had little iPads next to it, where you could go in and choose the three listed mechs, Valkyries, Zentradi Mecha, Destroids. Which ones do you want to see? You could choose three, or you could choose two, and then put something that wasn't there.
Right. And so it was basically a user survey, a feedback survey. Yeah. It was not, as some sites have erroneously posted, a list of what's coming out. Even what was in the cases there on display is not necessarily what will be coming out. It all depends on how the line sells.
Yeah. The VF2SS was not on the Ankit. It was not in there. It was not listed as one of the ones to choose. I had to manually write it in.
Hmm.
In fact, if I remember correctly, the questionnaire by far focused mostly on options for the first Macross series and Do You Remember Love, yeah. right?
Mm-hmm.
It was separate from, there was no, like you said, the options for anything beyond those, you had to manually enter them in yeah. for the questionnaire.
So, moving on then, there was a small photo booth with this weird Zentradi gimmick where it took your picture and supposedly turned you green and put a helmet on you, but it was a bit sketchy.
Yeah, it didn't work for me. I didn't understand it because it's supposed to detect whether you're an enemy, and I think everyone was detected as an enemy, but
I heard there were two types of Zentradi you could be,
yeah.
or something.
And, yeah, because when I went inside, it didn't really work, and then I kind of stood back a little bit more, and I ended up getting like a Brie-type patch put on my face, and all these really crazy wrinkles and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was supposed to render out the picture, the final picture, it was because it's supposed to actually take your photo and kind of merge the two. I just showed up in the end. It was just me.
I had that happen too. Yeah.
So,
like I just had me with a green face. I was looking like the Hulk or something.
And I don't think it worked because Renato went the day before I went. And he put up a picture saying, oh, this is me as Zentradi. But I think everyone looked
the same
and didn't actually
merge. It overlays like a plastic face. When it can't merge it, it seems to either put you up as your original photo or with this plastic mask-looking picture. But anyway, that was a gimmick. You come out of there, and to your left was this human-sized Batroid.
Larger than basketball player size, yeah.
And it must be noted that Egan measures everything in life according to basketball player size. And this is this huge VF-31. Again, to have this amount shown, made, on display, when we don't even have an air date for the show yet, it's just unprecedented. But it must be noted that that weapons module was still missing from this version.
So every version of the in 3D of the Batroid, we don't see it there.
But we got a good look at those gun tonfa. There was also a cardboard cutout of Freya.
Yes, signed by basically everyone that was on that stage presentation.
Yeah, some little sketches there from Tengen and Kawamori.
Once again, he put in that quote, the wind and the Valkyrie in Macross.
So, and opposite that, there were those pictures you mentioned earlier of all the staff, Egan, and we had what are two really standout pieces, but which are not necessarily things that will ever be released. I hope they are. The 135 VF1J and the, was it 1-1800 scale?
Yes, correct.
SDF1. Mm. That 1-35 VF1J looks the soul of Chogokin. It's amazingly chunky.
It's almost the size of a classic jumbo machinder. Indeed. Without the bubbly rounded edges, it looks really nice. It's rumored to, if things go right, things go well, it's rumored to transform. I don't think they said that they're actually going to light up. I don't know.
Yeah, we there's a lot that's unknown about it.
The signs do not say anything about the special features or transformation. We have the ASA staff. So if this gets made, their hope is for both that and the Macross, they will transform.
Yeah. Of course, none of these have officially been announced as being made into products yet. So they're very much proof of concepts at this point.
Yeah. What you couldn't see, because everything had a little sign next to it, even if it said High Metal R, this, you know, the VF2SS, the Zero, that big giant Macross, the 135 VF1J, all say display only.
Yes. So, is there a way of saying may not be what you see if it becomes a product?
Yeah.
And if it becomes a product, because it would be far from the first time there's been a line of Macross toys shown that didn't end up being eventualized.
Yeah. And so I think right after you get past that, there was the two figures, which were the Ronka and the Cheryl, the figure arts. Is it not figure arts or the
figure arts?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The posable figures, kind of like the Bandai's version of like a Figma. And those again, display only. No information on if they're actually being made. And at this point, they're not. Because this same show across the street was taking place. The Tamashii Nations is too big for that location. So there's another venue you have to walk maybe 3 minutes away to, where they were showing all the figures, figure arts figures that are going to be released this year, and the ball jointed figures, Tamashii Nation stuff with Saint Seiya, and there was no Macross stuff there. Anything that was shown there is going to be released. Star Wars, Dragon Ball.
To be fair, a lot of them said display only as well.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's the same rule. Like, yeah, it's just, but if it was going to be released, they would have had like a Macross section there. Because that's the area for that product. Those two figures were only there to showcase the signboard that was behind them.
Same goes for Britai that they made, which was in scale with the High Metal R VF1A Kakizaki. Both the Kakizaki VF1 and the Britai, which is in the figure arts hypothetical line, both of them are for display only.
Yeah. And then they had that, and we've seen it before, there was the Armored One kind of diorama, and it was pretty much the same. They now have a few battle pods with the missile racks now, so possibly those versions will come out. They had the full line of Destroids.
And they had the power suit.
Too. Male Do You Remember Love power suit version. And I looked at that one, because I actually voted for that one in the Ankit. And that one looks like that's ready to go. It wasn't, I mean, it was probably 3D printed and smoothed out, but it was pretty well polished. It wasn't a very rough thing. Because you even look at the monster, and the monster still looks pretty blocky.
Forgivable for what it is.
Yeah. But, and that thing's pretty big compared to the...
Bigger than anything most of the Destroids, yeah.
So, and that really looks fun. I would like to have one of those.
So. We've never had that as a regular injection model kit, or as a toy, for that matter. Yeah.
So you had this diorama. Opposite it was another diorama of Chogok in Frontier Era Valks, with a bunch of really cool explosion effects. And
thanks to Tamashii's... Or are they the figure art Tamashii's special effects? You can buy explosions, wind, and electricity.
Oh, yeah. And that one was, that diorama was supposed to look like the basically the dashboard of the VF-25.
Looking into it, seeing what's out there in space.
Yeah. So that was pretty much the end of it, and then you walked around the corner. There's a big long wall of the Delta posters. But that stage show where you walked around, it was a really small area. Maybe you could fit like 20 people. And it was just this looped kind of Hatsune Miku live stage kind of setup.
They called it a hologram. Most people who've been to a Vocaloid concert know that it's a 2D hologram.
Yeah.
But it's a very convincing one because they had a foreground and background, so you got a sense that they were standing on that stage.
Yeah, they had the background layer of plexiglass, the foreground layer, sorry, not that I've worked with Miku before, but then they had a lot of effects on the front layer as well, like they had sparkles coming off the character or a paper airplane coming.
Yeah,
so paper. They were playing with perspective a little bit even within the single layer. Very minor criticism. If they had a higher frame rate, it would look a lot more convincing. But they're doing that anime thing. They do a CG, whereas they were keeping the frame rate lower. It made a little bit jarring. But, so you had Cheryl and Ranka talking a bit, doing a song, which in the middle was interrupted by a transmission from Delta from Freya Vion.
And it's the first time we've heard her voice, or for that matter, any voice from Macross Delta.
And all you could really see was her eyes. It was like she was looking through a keyhole almost. Like she's like, oh my god, this is Cheryl and Rancor. I can't believe I'm seeing this.
Not much animation.
From what I can tell, she wasn't animated at all. It was just a still image.
I think it was the same thing they used for the cutout. They just zoomed in on her face.
And it was because she was a 2D image. The Ronka and Cheryl were 3D generated.
And she was just saying she was a big fan and that the transmission kept breaking up. And then Cheryl was like, well, obviously, this is someone who wants to convey her song. And,
so we're going
to
support you.
Support you, do your best, passing on the torch from one wallet-breaking commercial venture to the next. So it was a nice gesture, a kind of passing of the torch. There is no in-universe reason that we know of why that communication would actually happen. It was just a nice gesture, I'm sure.
There was a similar thing that was done between Macross Plus and Macross 7 to promote the movie editions for both, because they played in the theaters together.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen that kind of across the generation spanning time kind of way to promote both franchises.
And it was the first time we've heard Freya voiced, and she did sound very energetic, kind of as she was described by Kawamori, energetic, powerful, strong-willed girl chasing her dreams. She came across as that kind of almost AKB-0048 kind of character. Mm. Not quite as annoying, I didn't think.
So, and that pretty much was it, because after you walk through that, there was another anchored area in general. I kind of went through it, and I just gave up. And there was the Gundam area.
Cool.
And the Super Robot stuff. And I had to go, so I left. Mm-hmm. But as far as regarding Macross, that was pretty much everything.
Oh, yeah. But that was a lot.
Yeah, it was. Now, what people need to take away from this show is, again, I think after the broadcast, people were either, I don't like the look of Delta, the animation quality is this or that. It's always the same. And then when the news started dropping about the products, then people got happy, but then they're all assuming Bandai's doing everything. This is all coming out. No. The chances of this coming out will all depend on the success of Macross Delta.
Hmm.
Because if Delta doesn't fly, so to speak, they're going to cut this line. It'll go. Luckily, the High Metal Arts have already started. They've gotten a good start. It seems like people are actually buying them. But that's why they're starting with the classic Macross stuff.
Everyone starts with the BF ones.
Yeah. Once they go off that, if there's no buzz out there where new fans are just buying anything to support the franchise that are in Japan, that line will eventually probably
peter out,
just like the VF-100s.
Mm.
Because Bandai tried to do this with the Frontier Boom, but it was already past the broadcast. But Frontier was generating a bunch of money. So they announced everything for the VF-100s, which eventually became the High Metal line, which eventually they stopped that as well, because nothing was selling as much as the VF-25.
Hmm.
Only the classic stuff. And so,
yeah, I think the High Metal R line, I know when they were announced and when we first saw them at the Cheryl's birthday event, there was a lot of questioning, what niche do these serve? Why do they exist? Where it's such a different scale to the Bandai Chogokin stuff and then the Yamato Arcadia stuff. But looking at the fact you've got this younger generation of fans now who are in their late teens through to probably late 20s, early 30s, they have disposable income. They might like a Valkyrie from something they like. They are not maybe huge collectors or want to spend $300-$400. But if they pre-order or get one of these at even a slight discount, looking at 7,000, 8,000 yen, for a toy from any of these series, and maybe they want to get a couple, like they could basically be the Figmas of Valkyries. You know, you mix and match. You can make, and you can make scenarios and dioramas and stuff. So hopefully they will appeal to a market which isn't as hardcore as these very deep-pocketed, you know, 30 and 40-somethings who have been collecting since the original and since 2 and plus.
Yeah. That's what's been Bandai's strategy for a lot of its other franchises. The ones I mentioned in its quarterly reports are its top franchises, Gundam, Saint Seiya, Dragon Ball, and all of these, they have a way to make sure that the people who are hardcore fans who have been it for literally decades, they're satisfied, whilst bringing in a new generation, so the fountain is always constantly being revived, replenished.
Yeah, because this scale, this 1/100 scale of the VF-100s, then the High Metal R, and then they brought it back. I mean, it's had a rough road. I can't believe it's lasted this long, but going back to the person they have brought in, speaking to him briefly, he has the original High Metal, the 155, and if you look, he's trying to bring that back. The packaging is supposed to kind of go back to the old packaging that Bandai did. That's why he's, you know, the original High Metal line for 1/100 didn't have there was box art, but it wasn't Tengen box art. And this one, they're actually, you know, getting good box art on it. The way they're packaging it, it's got the open box window, the toy in Batroid mode. Looks like they are putting the 21 on hold, because that was actually kind of previewed in one of the magazines, whether it's Hobby Japan or the defunct Dengeki Hobby physical magazine. That has been put on the back burner. That is no longer on the radar. But if the line is successful, that would probably come back. And I think that is a totally wise choice, because if they would have went from a 1J, Do You Remember Love, and they ended up doing, was it, they did a Fire Valk, and they did
a VF-19S.
Yes.
As opposed to something else.
Yeah, and they actually even did the sound booster for which was really good. But I think it was, again, the Frontier boom was petering out a bit, and that affected the line. And if they would have went with, I think, the 21, they probably would have lost a lot more money. So
I suppose the takeaway here, as you're saying, is if you want more of these more esoteric designs or lesser-known Valkyries, support the line, as with everything else. It's that simple a connection. Buy the product, more will come out. But speaking of product...
Yes.
There was actually another event on which not many sites have covered yet, Adrian, which I know you visited today.
Yeah. So, we're in November, and every November is the Miyazawa Moke Winter Edition. And are we in fall? Still fall, aren't we?
Still fall.
Okay. Miyazawa Moke fall. And this is, we've talked about it before, because sometimes it's in this building. Mm-hmm. The last time it was in this building, they, Evolution Toys, announced the 160 VF2SS. And I knew it was coming, so Egan and I attended it today. And, of course, the first thing I did was I ran over to the Evolution Toy booth to see what they had. And they had the Sylvie version on display. And it was the plastic version. It wasn't a 3D printed or a prototype. It is still a test version. It is not the final version. It was made out of plastic.
But they're sticking hard to the date they announced, right?
Yeah, and that's supposed to be next month.
Wow.
December. It probably will make it, I'm sure. But we did ask. They said that this is not the final version. And their tooling is all done in China, from what I've heard.
Oh, okay.
So, and they're a small company, so this is probably a sample they received in the last few months, and they've got to wait for the next one to come in to before they give it a go. I still like it. It still has its problems. It's exactly what I'm expecting, And when I buy it, I'm going to be happy because it's going to be this big toy. And it's, you know, it's going to be part of my collection, my growing Macross 2 collection.
Which is part of what's most unexpected for me, that I would not have expected saying 5 years ago, oh, yeah, there's going to be two companies trying to make Macross 2 Valkyrie 2 toys. To have someone have said that to me.
Yeah, and right above it on the display was another VF2SS with SAP.
Another one.
Another one. And previous Wonderfest, you spoke to the same person who works for
Evolution Toys.
Evolution. And they said they were going to do it. They said they'll be doing the next version. So, so I assumed, oh, okay, that's the next version, because it's in fighter mode, and it had the armor on the leg, so I couldn't see the color stripe. So I'm like, okay, there's the next version. Had the.
We should point out next, not next, although next. Both are applicable.
Yeah. So, you know, it has the little placard that says, you know, VF2SS with, you know, Super Parts version. They're looking to do, I think it's a June release date. Sometime in June.
I have to remember again.
And the price?
I was like, sama nisen, I think?
Yeah, it was 3.2 months. So yeah. It was like 32,000 yen.
Yep.
So, well, of course, you know, there'll be pre-order discounts, I'm sure, as usual. But basically, going by the recommended retail price, then plus 7,000 yen for the SAP.
Yeah. Yes. And so I looked at it, and then I had to do a bunch of other business, so I kind of ran around. And then Ian eventually showed up, and we met again. And again, I was assuming this was the next version. Not next, but next.
Mm-hmm.
And Ian goes, did you notice it was the yellow stripe version? And I was like, what? So we ran all the way back just so I can see if it actually had the yellow stripe on the chest in fighter mode. I look, and I'm like, it is the yellow stripe version. I look to the guy's just standing there because I've already been there like three times. And I turn around, I'm like, is this the fairy? He goes, the fairy squad version. He actually said it. And I said, so you're making... you know, I said Japanese, so there's going to be a red one, a blue one, a yellow one, and he goes, green.
I wasn't even expecting that.
And then I'm like, all right, I turn around to Egan and I go, yeah, next you know, they're going to have to make the Moon Festival one. He's like, oh, the solid red one. Wow, this guy has watched the show.
I think that's one cool thing about many of the people we've met at the different companies, be it Bandai, be it Yamato / Arcadia, be it Evolution Toys, they're fans.
Yeah, so. And they wouldn't, because the SAP version is still pending licensing approval.
Mm.
They are saying, please don't take photos. The big sign, no photos. Photos prohibited. The SAP was not 3D printed. It was already a plastic molded version. He had said that this version, a lot of it is held together with glue. That's why it's, don't take a picture of it. It's a little bit frumpy. It's something currently being developed. But it did have the missile pods on both the legs and on the wings. They actually open.
He demonstrated to us the opening doors for all of them.
Yeah, and they have little molded missiles inside.
Hmm.
So, and again, it's, you're not, don't expect Arcadia quality. I'm sure it'll change a little bit, but it's nothing like that. Mega House had the Cosmo Fleet SDF-1.
Yes.
Which was recently announced. It's about 7,000 yen. Right?
Yeah. And they had the 3D printed painted version.
Okay.
And it's a parts former, so you take it apart.
Okay.
Because it, and we'll put up the pictures. I took a lot of pictures. That'll be up on the Macross World site, main page. And it looks like there's basically all the parts come off, and you get a kind of a chest version piece where the head's together. So,
I mean, the head doesn't fly by itself?
No, it's not the Macross 2 version. And so, yeah, it basically has like a core version for the attack mode. So it looks to be a parts former. And there's these two odd white tab parts that we couldn't figure out what they belong to.
They weren't the size, the shape, although they were about the same size as the parts that are on the bottom of the leg that are physically what it stands on, but they're a different shape.
Yeah.
That's the only thing we can think of them as.
See, Hasegawa had their 172 25 VF-25, the complete Alto with
armor. Sorry, super parts.
That was painted and displayed, probably the same one that was at the previous shows. Takaratomi had the
VF-1A 1144 scale diecast. I'm trying to remember if they specified diecast or not, but
yeah.
Toys in various modes, which can part form into the different modes.
I didn't really get it, but apparently the Takaratomi one is, if you want the Gerwok mode, you have to get the fighter and the Batroid and then make it work yourself or something like that.
That seems to be a very Kawamori type of solution.
I don't really get it, because when they promote it, it shows like the, you know, like this mode, but I think they're cutting corners a little bit.
It is 1/144 scale, so
that's true. Yeah. Now that's a hobbyist toy. There was some Ichiban Kuji stuff. None of the figures, but from Bandai, they showed the little signboard sketch ones, the collection.
The mini shikshis?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I went to talk to a friend of mine who was former Yamato employee, now working at Hobby Stock, and he said there's some interesting stuff coming from them. I can't get into that. And I was about ready to leave, and he himself goes, yeah, Arcadia's not here. And I said, you're right. I totally didn't notice that, because I was solely just wanted to see the VF2SS in action. He was right. Arcadia was missing in action today.
Wow. Should we read anything into that?
I mean, no. They have missed the show before. They don't always attend. And this Miyazawa-moke was the big Miyazawa-moke. It's a mix of all hobby items, not just figures and mecha. It was train parts, train rails, a little bit of like decals for guns, RC race cars, battleships. When it's usually here, it's just mecha and sexy figures,
which is the way I like it.
Yeah, so it is a slightly different Miyazawa-moke. And I think this one they actually take the orders. Like, they had another floor where you go up and you order. Mm-hmm. You look at the product, you go up and you order it. Which was also worth mentioning, the VF2SS with super parts is going to be distributed through Miyazawa-moke exclusively.
So,
it doesn't really mean anything. but it could affect
which retailers,
retailers you can get them at. Mm-hmm. Like, AmiAmi was actually there this year, and I think it's the first time AmiAmi actually had a booth at Miyazawa-moke, because they're a gray area exporter.
Mm-hmm.
But they were showcasing an original product.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of interesting seeing them there. Sometimes, I know, usually for Miyazawa-moke, HLJ will send a representative there, take pictures, but they're not actually exhibiting there. So I'm sure they know each other. I don't know if Miyazawa-moke is their distributor. They're the biggest distributor, so they probably are. So, but they made it a point to say on that little placard that the SAP version will be Miyazawa-moke Gente.
Wow.
And that SAP version was the yellow striped one. And not the next version. But he said they're doing the next. But
well, that's what they said to me originally back at Wonderfest, so it will be interesting to see. But they did mention at Wonderfest that, and again, I'd pointed out several design comments that people had in the Western market, and they were surprised at some, aware of others, but said that they were quite happy with the amount of interest they'd received and pre-orders they'd gotten, and that things, if they went well, the follow-up version, which was going to be NEX with the SAP, would depend on the volume of orders for the first one, but that seemed to be going according to plan.
Yeah.
So since they're showing this now, they've gotten enough interest in pre-sales alone to do this. So, wow. Who would have thought?
And for those of you thinking, well, if they did this, that means Bandai is going to go and do DX Shogokin. I don't think so. And don't see the High Metal R version as proof. Because one, it may not get made. Even though it's this far in development and it looks ready to go, it's not up on the block to be put out at this time. There's a lot more High Metal R's in front of it, even that are less developed at this mm-hmm. point from what we're hearing.
Some of which may be surprising once word gets out.
Yeah. So that's not coming anytime soon, but it's being worked on, so I'm happy. But the only reason they're making that is because the person in charge of that line is a Macross 2 fan. And apparently, the only reason they did make it is because that person, who happens to not be Japanese, got Bandai to check with Kawamori if it'd be okay to make this toy. And Kawamori said, yeah, sure, go ahead. Which has been Arcadia's problem and Yamato's problem every time I ask them, please make it, please make it. Ah, Kawamori, they don't want to step on anyone's toes. And they're not going to. But I'm assuming, I'm not saying this is what happened, but he's a fan. And a lot of times, I know we do this with Tengen. When you get a close relationship or you have some kind of trust with a coworker, you can kind of go outside that barrier and kind of hint towards stuff or actually just approach it. And most Japanese will not. And I'm guessing that's how he's getting this far.
Kind of gaijin smashed it.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit of a gaijin smash on that. And but again, he's probably passionate about it at work. Right. And just like how Tengen makes fun of me, he probably gets made fun of at work.
So you found a comrade in arms.
Yeah. I don't think it has one to do with the other. And he even said that he'll probably buy the Evolution Toy one for research. Basically, because he's working on one, he'll probably look at it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, hopefully we can have him on a future podcast and talk about some of this. That would be great.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. The other thing I found out today was apparently regarding the new Macross Delta DX Chogokins. From what I'm hearing, they're being designed by the team that is usually designing all the best Valkyries.
Wow. Okay, that explains the Draken. That explains the Draken.
There's no official word, but I asked somebody who knows those people, and I don't want to get that person in trouble, but I heard he's doing that. Not he, they. They are a team.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, because, I mean, it kind of makes sense, because we haven't seen a smoother bottom
since a certain other Valk.
Yeah, and that was one of the ones they did.
Alright, well look guys, let's wrap it up here for this episode. I mean, I'm exhausted just covering all these topics and there's a lot more we could be talking about. So look at this, no matter what people may be thinking at this early stage, we have Delta incoming, we have a almost completed first episode coming up in less than 2 months, and all the announcements and magazine coverage which will invariably lead up to that. We have more toys coming out that I think anyone can really afford. And lots of more news to come. We have events like Tamashii Nations where 60-70% of the floor is Macross with holographic concerts and 1/35 scale VF1Js alongside the Draken and the 31, which are both gorgeous looking new Valkyries. So there's a lot to look forward to. Start getting hyped. There has really never been a better time to be a Macross fan. And on that note, we're looking forward to talking about Macross with you all again next time on Macross Speaker Podcast.